honesty.
Well, hello everyone. They're calling it the mother of all tacos. Specifically, Bill Kristol said that. That's a direct quote from Bill Kristol. Up and down my timeline, people are saying this is the biggest US military defeat since Vietnam. This is America's Suez. Remember I said 250 years on the dot. John Bagot Glubb, the fate of empires. The time's up, champ. Basically, Trump tacoed at the final hour after, you know, threatening hail and fury and, you know, Armageddon and so on, the end of Iranian civilization. At the final hour, he announced the ceasefire. And surprisingly, the Iranian foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, basically agreed that, I mean, there was not a direct meeting between America and Iran. This was engineered by the Pakistani prime minister and field marshal who were named in the letter by both Trump and Araghchi. And so that, yeah, the Pakistanis were the mediators. And what was notable, what was very notable in both the Iranian communique and Trump's original message, and then Trump kind of retruthed or shared the letter that the Iranian foreign minister sent, is that both of them mentioned the framework of the 10-point Iranian plan, which had been out there for a while. I'd seen these 10 demands repeated quite a lot over the past couple of weeks. So they were definitely out there. And if you remember, at the Easter Bunny parade, Trump was asked about the 10-point plan. And, you know, he kind of gave a non-committal answer. He said, oh, you know, he dismissed it or whatever. But that was only like one day before. So what changed between the Easter parade and the kind of ridiculous press conference where, you know, Trump told the shaggy dog story about the heroic rescue of, you know, Colonel Jesus up in the mountains and the 155 planes sent to rescue him? What changed between that press conference and Trump sending the tweet in the morning and this mother of all tacos, as it's being called? In this video, I'm going to break down exactly what I think is going on, what may happen next, how the Israelis are taking it, what the Iranians are thinking, and what actually this means for the conflict. Before we get going, I'll remind people, pick up a course at the Academic Agency. Mega Bundle has been selling very well all throughout Easter. Trivium, if you just want to, you know, the core courses there. There's Foundations of Economics. Still, the original course, you know, that's sold many copies in its time as well. It's like my original number one hit, that Foundations of Economics. Foundations of Politics, Shakespeare, of course, many other great courses are available as well. Okay, so let's get into, so buy it now. Let's get into what's gone on here. I've got my theories. there's a lot of, I mean, obviously, you know, most of the world is taking it as a US defeat, and has people have come out and said that pretty much across the board. Of course, MAGA themselves, because they are filled with people of double-digit IQ who are cognitively incapable of processing what has happened, they're declaring it, you know, 4D chess, masterful strategy. Well done, sir. Well done, sir. You have reopened the strait, which was already open before you started this war, and achieved absolutely none of your objectives, but absolutely masterful. You're like Sun Tzu and Napoleon and Julius Caesar all rolled into one, Mr. President. Fantastic work. God bless Donald Trump. Okay, obviously his supporters are going to do that. But of course, as I've explained before, Donald Trump could mash a cow pat into his face and those same supporters would explain why this is actually a work of genius. Okay, that's how Trump and his kind of cult work. For everybody else, this is obviously you know, being chalked up as a defeat for the US. I think there's actually more going on here, and I will explain. So why, like, what accounts for the about, for the kind of quick taco from Trump here? Why has this happened? Well, I have my theory that this, first of all, I'm not going to let this pilot rescue story go. 155 aircraft, a massive gunfight between thousands of Iranians, and 155 US aircraft. No casualties, no footage of this whatsoever. Okay, this legendary mission, Colonel Jesus, you know, makes it, bleeding, gammy leg, all 7,000 foot mountain, hides in a cave. Right, that was the story that I reviewed yesterday. I'm not going to let that go. What was all that about? Now, what if that was, an, as has been speculated by Larry Johnson and many other people, that that actually was a cover story for a failed special op. The special op being something like they were trying to grab the uranium or something, okay, Venezuela style, and it failed. And maybe there weren't 155 aircraft there. Maybe it was just those ones that you saw that were shot down, right? The scenes that was the C-130s that were stuck in the sand, and the helicopters there, and whoever was involved with that mission. Don't forget, you know, the C-130s, the two Black Hawk helicopters that the Iranians say were shot down, the Americans say got away, and the four Little Bird helicopters there, they could easily take about 100 men, okay? If this was like a truly elite tier cape shit mission, okay, those people could have, you know, if the idea was they're going to go in, they're going to grab that uranium, they're going to make it out Mission Impossible style, and it failed, it catastrophically failed. And then the shaggy dog story, okay, which, I mean, if you believed it initially, I'll grant you, okay, there was enough there that you might believe it either way. If you believe it after the horse shit Trump was slinging on Easter Monday in that press conference with Hegseth and the general and the CIA director, you know, I don't even want you watching. Okay, if you believe it after that story, you know, you go and watch Tim Pool. All right, you're going to watch somebody else who's more your speed. Okay, because that didn't happen. That story that Trump told was a pack of horse shit, which makes it more likely that it was a cover story. Now, that went wrong, okay? Then, if you notice, in that press conference, the CIA director looked very uncomfortable and the general didn't look that comfortable, okay? Hegseth was obviously Hegseth and Trump was obviously Trump, but those two didn't look very comfortable. Then, just yesterday, in the run-up to this taco, the New York Times ran this story. Now, this is where, okay, this is not just theory crafting by me. This is actually what happened. The New York Times ran this story where they basically spilled all the beans, how Trump took the US to war with Iran. And what's very noticeable, if you read this story, a lot of the blame is pinned on Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israelis. Basically, Netanyahu was in the cabinet room. Netanyahu and the Israelis sold this war to Trump. They gave him intelligence, a man called David Barnier, this man that you see on the left here on your screen. He is the head of Mossad. And it has been widely reported that it was his plan that the decapitation strike on the Ayatollah would cause the Iranian regime to fall. Okay, now what is revealed in this New York Times article is that that the Israelis were very kind of confident in the success of this kind of plan. Okay, and they really pitched Trump very hard and sold Trump on the idea in this meeting in February in the cabinet room. What is very notable, okay, is that Marco Rubio, okay, General Kane, CIA Director John Ratcliffe, the one who was very uncomfortable in that press conference, and J.D. Vance all were in this meeting and said, Mr. President, this is not going to work. This is not going to work. The CIA director, John Ratcliffe, said, this is just, the chances of failure are high. General Kane said, this is not going to work. We are not, we're going to get militarily, we can't do this, sir, et cetera, et cetera. So all of this is to say that this New York Times story was put out there. And let's read between the lines. This was put out there the day that this ceasefire was signed and one day after the ridiculous press conference, the cartoonish press conference that we watched yesterday, shortly before Donald Trump appeared on a balcony next to the Easter Bunny talking yet more nonsense. Okay, that was on Monday. Yesterday, the New York Times ran this story where all the beans are spilled, okay? Where we are told that many members inside the cabinet, many very senior people in the Trump administration itself were against this war. What does this tell you? There's an awful lot of arse covering going on. Wasn't me, Gov. It was that guy. It was Netanyahu. It was the Israelis who done it. It was Hegseth that done it. And it was Trump himself who was the most bloodthirsty. Okay. What does it tell you? All of these people are shifting and maneuvering because they know that this thing has gone south. There's a lot of people in the military who are uncomfortable with the details of that massive operation being spilled, okay, on Easter Monday. And there's a lot of other people who just flat out don't believe it, like me. Okay, this has brought kind of embarrassment to some of the higher-ups there in the American deep state, as I've said from the start. Now it's all there, black and white, clear as crystal in the New York Times, okay? It strikes me that we're gearing up for a situation where Pete Hegseth, in particular, is going to be the fall guy for this. I've said from the start, that guy's going to jail, okay? And yesterday, when that New York Times story came out and Trump sent that tweet about, you know, ending Iranian civilization, I think it was up to 85 people in Congress were saying that, the 25th Amendment needs to be enacted. You got people like Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and so on coming out. You had a lot of people, Alex Jones, a lot of rightists, Tucker Carlson and so on, saying like, now is the time. Trump has lost his mind. 25th Amendment and so on. And at that exact moment of that crunch point, the story is out there that Vance was against this. Rubio was against this. General Kane was against this. The CIA director was against this. Okay. So we're being, like, what I'm saying is those people are setting up for Trump and Hegseth to own this failure and also for the blame to be pinned squarely on the Israelis. Okay, and maybe, almost certainly it was Netanyahu's fault. This is his war, okay? So that's the second thing that I think has happened. And the combination of these two things, the failure of this secret mission, whatever it was, that the US air pilot rescue story was a cover for, right? The combination of the failure of Mission Impossible, okay, and this New York Times story was then intolerable for Trump, which meant that he put out that tweet in order to set himself up for the taco that was coming, last night. There's one more little detail that I will add to this, another wrinkle in the story that I think is important, because one of the questions is, well, how come the Iranians came, like, you know, after a month of not talking, how come Arachi, you know, has said, okay, well, let's sit down and talk. I'll get to the 10 points in a second. Okay, I'll get to the 10 points in a second and what all of that means. One of the little details that, you know, will whiz past your timeline, or maybe you won't even see it, but it caught my eye, is that yesterday, the Netanyahu was very bullish about bombing Iranian railways. Okay, they were bombing infrastructure. And one of the things they bombed was railways. The railways they bombed in Iran were actually Chinese-owned or Chinese investment Belt and Road Initiative railways that cost something like $40 billion for the Chinese. And reports are that the Chinese were very angry about the damage to their stuff, notably those Belt and Road railways. And the Chinese seem like they were the ones who basically had a, you know, said to the Iranians, "Look, look, we're going to have to do this because the hitting of that Belt and Road is unacceptable to us." Right? The Chinese seem like they've been involved in this. You know, they're close to the Pakistanis. They're in the background. That seems like there was some red line crossed by the Israelis by hitting the Belt and Road railroad. That's something else. More details will probably come out about that later, but it caught my eye. Now there's the topic of the 10 points, which were both mentioned by Trump and by the Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation of his name, sorry about that. And I'll just show you the 10 points. Okay, Trump has agreed to these 10 points for a peace plan as a basis of negotiations. Now, I should note this: whoever said that is not actually true. Trump has not agreed to these 10 points. He's agreed that this is the framework. This is the starting point for a negotiation. Okay, the Americans have got 15 points. The Iranians have got 10 points, and there'll be some negotiated settlement. Okay, and they've got 2 weeks to try to reach a deal, okay, between these 10 points from the Iranians and the 15 points from the Americans, okay? The reason that everybody is pointing to this TACO as a, you know, a American humiliation, American Suez, American, you know, Vietnam War all over again is because these 10 points, I mean, let's just read them. What, ensuring Iran is not subjected to another attack, permanently ending the war, not just a ceasefire, ending Israeli strikes in Lebanon, lifting all U.S. sanctions imposed on Iran, ending all regional skirmishes against Iran's allies, reopening the Strait of Hormuz, imposing a fee of $2 million on every ship passing through the Strait of Hormuz, sharing the fees with the Sultanate of Oman, establishing rules for safe passage through the Strait of Hormuz, and using Hormuz passage fees for reconstruction instead of compensation. Now, that's the starting point for the negotiation, and Trump said he's cool, right, for using that, okay? Now, there's a few little sticking points in there, and I'll come on to the Israelis in a second. Point three, the strikes on Lebanon, are currently a sticking point. As I'm recording this on Wednesday morning, as it is right now, that's the 8th of April, as I record this, Israel was still attacking Lebanon. And as far as I could see, Iran is still hitting Tel Aviv and hitting Israeli targets in Israel with its missiles. And the reason for that is because Israel has not stopped hitting Lebanon. And Iran, as a condition for this ceasefire, wants Israel out of Lebanon. Okay, or it wants them to back off, stop attacking that. And so they're going to keep on hitting Israel until Israel stop with that. This could be the sticking point. We'll get on to that in a second. But you can see, if you consider where this war started, okay, and these points, I mean, these points, if any one of them taken, it enlarges the power of Iran. It makes its capabilities stronger. It gives them powers that they did not have before the war, including the control of the Strait of Hormuz and a $2 million toll fee, which apparently is going to be in operation during this ceasefire. So these, you know, I mean, the point is America has not agreed to all 10 of those points, but if any one of those points are conceded by the Americans, it's already a defeat. Let's not forget, before this war started, Iran had already agreed to nuclear non-proliferation, and they did not control the Strait of Hormuz. Now they do. I mean, I saw a video actually from Nick Fuentes explaining why this is an unambiguous US defeat. In fact, let me play that clip from Fuentes. There's a couple of things that Nick does not touch on, okay, in this clip that I will get onto. It's possible that elsewhere in this stream, he elaborated on the things that I will say that he does not say. But he just lays out the points very well. Let's listen to Fuentes a second, and then I'll come back in.
This is a two-week plan deferring further military action to a later date so that we will apparently now meet with Iran in Pakistan to hammer out a better, more comprehensive, longer-term deal. In the meantime, we've given Iran control over the strait, so much so that they're going to make money off of it, and they're going to reinvest that money in the reconstruction and rebuilding of their country. Now, this is what was announced earlier tonight. And what's interesting about that is this is a complete and total U.S. defeat. This is an absolute, there is no ambiguity here. It's not debatable. It's not subject to interpretation. We lost decisively. It's like I said, when we got into this conflict, we had about five military objectives here. And these were the things we were demanding from Iran. We were seeking an end to their nuclear program, forfeiture of their highly enriched uranium stockpile, restrictions on their ballistic missiles, restrictions on their support for regional proxies, and regime change. Of course, once the war started, Iran seized control of the strait, and so the sixth objective became to wrest control over the strait, or at least open it for shipping. We did not achieve any of those things. Any of those things. There is no regime change. We did not suppress or destroy their capability to build and launch drones and missiles. So they maintain that conventional strategic capability. We did not seize or in any way restrict their ability to enrich uranium. We didn't take their stockpile of enriched uranium. We didn't restrict their ability to further enrich or make more enriched uranium. We did not meaningfully degrade or destroy the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, and the regime remains intact. The only thing that you can say that we achieved from the war is that we dealt a pretty significant blow to their navy. Arguably, we damaged a significant percentage of their missile launch platforms, and probably their stockpile of missiles is less than 50% of what it was before the war. But it was not destroyed. It was not annihilated. And neither was their navy. They still maintain a pretty substantial navy, which consists in fast and maneuverable speedboats. They still maintain about 50 tiny submarines, which they use to close the Strait of Hormuz. They still maintain their mine-laying vessels. So the IRGC still has a very small and nimble and mobile navy, which, again, they used to close the strait. It's just those bigger ships which were destroyed. That's about all that you can say. So we...
All right, I think that's enough from Nick. What are some of the things that he did not mention there that I think are very significant as a result of the military conflict? That was something that Iran did right at the start of the conflict. Took out American radars in the area, took out American bases in the Gulf states. What was it, 13 bases in the region? Basically, the Americans were expelled, and the troops in those bases had to flee and go and stay in hotels. Okay, this in itself, I think, was quite a big loss to, you know, like the U.S. projection of power, and that happened pretty early in the war. You could argue that even after, like, after the decapitation strike failed and Iran hit those Gulf states and the U.S. bases and then seized the strait, that they, you know, won strategically the war on, like, day one or two, or, like, within the first couple of days. when, you know, the regime didn't fall, when they struck back, and when they, so that was the thing that I didn't think anybody else saw coming, was the hitting of the U.S. bases in the Gulf states, and the hitting of letting the Gulf states know that they are not safe, that the presence of the U.S. there is no guarantee of protection. And the American inability to protect Qatar, Bahrain, UAE, Saudi Arabia, right, the lack of protection for these places, okay, has been a stunning blow. This is why I've said the John Bagot Club, 250 years, Suez, American Suez. I mean, I said it two, three weeks ago. You know, up against a wall of coping, as is ever the case with these things. It's just Americans for you. They always cope. They cannot process loss, right? Because they live in the delusion. This is what actually happened, okay? And I think that is pretty, like, a significant part of why we're seeing this. Now, there is another question, okay? And a question that is not fully answered. There's two questions. One is the question of Israel. Okay. Now, up and down my timeline, it's been quite entertaining to watch Zionists and people in the Knesset and people in Israel and so-called Hebrew Twitter have been seething. They are incandescent with rage. They are fuming. Netanyahu was said to be livid. Laura Loomer is spazzing out up and down Twitter. Okay. They're not very happy. There's footage of Mark Levin physically shaking. The Zionists are very, very unhappy. There's one Knesset member said Trump went from a hero to zero. Okay, so they are fuming, the Israelis. One, because this ceasefire, they weren't consulted. This was done bilaterally between Trump and the Iranians. Okay, so the first thing is the Israelis were simply informed by the American government that this had happened, and they were not in on the process. They were not consulted. Very significant. Two, of course, Israel love to escalate. This is a de-escalation, and they like to escalate. Okay, so this is one way of, this is a huge spanner in the works, because, of course, we know the Israelis have a long history of not abiding by ceasefires, of crossing every red line, of escalating, of doing whatever it can to draw America back in, okay? And they've got previous on this, okay? They have cheated on, they have used negotiations, okay, as a pretext for assassination and decapitation strikes. Now, they're talking about Foreign Minister Agachi meeting with J.D. Vance in Pakistan. Okay, they're talking about that, a meeting actually happening between actual Iranians and the U.S. vice president. What if the Israelis try another assassination strike there? Okay, and this is the question a lot of people are asking. The Iranians know this, and they've already said time and time again, you fool us once, you fool me twice, you're not going to fool us a third time. And yet they still have agreed to this ceasefire. So what is going on? And there are a number of people on the other side, on the Iranian side, lots of them are celebrating and saying this is a massive humiliation for America. Okay. But there's still that voice at the back of everybody's mind saying, like, hold on a second. What are they doing? They're surely not falling for it again. What's going on? So that is, I mean, whether the ceasefire, like the Israelis are the Guinness kind of world record holders of breaking ceasefires and not abiding by rules or laws or respecting anything, okay? And they're livid. So we know that they're going to try to sabotage this, okay? But also, the Iranians must know at this point not to trust the Americans in any sense, in any which way. So how come they've agreed to this meeting in Pakistan? This is a cause for concern from the Iranian side, because this is an enemy without honor. This is an enemy that, you know, from their point of view, is completely evil and has previous in, Disney villain moves like sneak attacks during negotiations. Okay, I mean, and if, I mean, if that happened, if let's pretend Agachi went to Pakistan and they killed him, you know, I mean, he's probably one of the most popular people in the entire world right now. You know, whether you like it or not, the objective fact is there are millions, if not billions, of people who love this Iranian foreign minister right now. Okay, if they killed him, the Israelis, I mean, I don't know what that would do. So there's a very big question mark, which remains really at the heart of this entire conflict, which is at what point are the Americans going to just turn around to the Israelis and say, just no, turn around to Netanyahu and say, no, absolutely stop. Now, a lot of people within Israel are saying that this ceasefire represents a catastrophic loss for Netanyahu, and it is the end of Netanyahu. It is the end of Netanyahu's career, okay? Yeah, I don't know about that. The people saying that within Israel, let's not forget, are his opposition. A lot of the people in it, like there are a lot of people in Israel who don't like Netanyahu, okay? Now, over on the US side of things, I've had this long-term idea that there are elements in the deep state, including the CIA, who were never up for this and who are trying to rug pull the Israelis, okay, to basically make Netanyahu take the fall, not only for this, but also for the, you know, the what do they call the genocide in Gaza, okay, and for all of the other problems that they're causing, you know, problems in Syria, you know, the new genocide in Lebanon, and their general aggression, and also them causing problems for U.S. president after U.S. president after U.S. president. And also them causing problems in domestic politics as well. I mean, look at Laura Loomer going around like an absolute nutcase, or somebody like Mark Levin. Okay, so I have had this long-term cope that Tucker Carlson actually represents. He represents this tendency within the American deep state. Okay, now if that is true, the CIA director, John Ratcliffe, who, you know, played the sycophant in that Easter Monday press conference, but he clearly didn't look comfortable, and in that New York Times article is leaking against Trump, okay, and J.D. Vance is leaking against Trump. They're all positioning, even Marco Rubio, they're all positioning themselves, okay, against Hegseth and against Trump and against Netanyahu, okay, because they're not stupid. They know, they understand public opinion. They know which way the wind is turning, which way the wind is blowing, yeah. So this is the big question in the next couple of weeks, okay? To what extent will Israel sabotage all of this with their usual tricks? And then if and when, it's not a question of if, it's a question of when they do, will the Americans finally put the foot down? And will the American deep state finally throw Netanyahu under the bus? Because I do believe, okay, and I could be wrong, I believe that we're setting up. That New York Times article is pivotal. And the little detail of that, of the Israelis hitting Chinese investments, let's not forget that, the Chinese investments hit by the Israelis, okay? I believe that the cost to the world economy, the cost to all different powers, has now become too great, okay? I've said before, there's a diminishing marginal returns of blackmail and the value of blackmail, okay, as against causing a global crisis on this level. Okay, we're talking a fifth of the world's oil. We're talking a huge amount of the world's liquid natural gas. We're talking a third of the world's fertilizer. We're talking threatening the world with famine and fuel shortages and goods shortages and economic crisis. Okay. At what point does the cost of that become greater in the calculation than the cost of reputational damage due to blackmail or whatever else is in those Epstein files, blah, 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 blah. Okay? And this is the true meaning, in my opinion, of Tucker Carlson and of Joe Kent and of these New York Times articles and of, you know, 3 years of Judge Napolitano's crew of ex-spooks calling Netanyahu everything, and Max Blumenthal and, you know, Matthew Ho and Aaron Mate and all these sorts of characters, and Dave Smith. I think the true meaning of them is for Netanyahu to take the fall. And then in terms of US domestic politics, it will be Witkoff and Kushner. Whether they'll actually see any justice is unlikely. They'll probably go to Israel or something, right? And Pete Hegseth will be the main fall guy, okay? Whether it, I mean, I said, I think this is the end of the Trump presidency as well, this moment. I think that the wheels are in motion for Trump to be removed at this point. Now, I know that they've said that hundreds of times already. The walls are closing in, right? But there's a difference this time. The difference this time is that he's gone to a place that no other US president has ever gone to before. He threatened the elimination of another civilization. He threatened genocide. And he's created this the chaos of this war on bad intelligence from a foreign power, which was now reported and is a matter of record in the New York Times. He has lost a large section of his own base, regardless of what Fox News tell you, okay? He has lost a large section of his own base, and the vast majority of the American public is against what's been going on. So the conditions this time are different. When you've got Robert Barnes and Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson and Candace Owens and all of these people who were formerly MAGA saying these sorts of things, and then at the same time, many, many left-wing voices, including Korea Democrats, politicians, saying the same sorts of things, it's basically over. And what I think, what I'm reading between the lines, is that they're setting up for a J.D. Vance to come in, right? The narrative, if you look at Robert Barnes and Tucker Carlson and all these things, and to be fair to Fuentes, he has flagged this early, he telegraphed this early, okay? And so did Dickie Spencer and so on. The true meaning of all of that is that when all of these people are thrown under the bus, when Hegseth goes to jail, when Netanyahu is blamed for all of this, the person who can come out smelling of roses is Vance. And it could be that that narrative setting is not for a 2028 run, but is actually for President J.D. Vance in the short term. We will see. Time will tell. Obviously, this is a developing story. And, you know, the Israelis can do a lot. They can do a lot to scupper all of this. They've done it 100 times in the past. Okay? But something seems different here. It's very, very strange for, the way Trump is speaking, it's like the war is over, okay? And the way people, insiders in Washington are talking about it, it seems like the war is over. Maybe the reason that the war is over is because there were quite a lot of leaks, okay, in the past 24, 48 hours of Pete Hegseth having asked various different generals to resign and those generals refusing to resign. There were leaks of reports of U.S. generals refusing the president's orders, okay, because what he was asking them to do was unacceptable, okay? My whole theory is that this admin went rogue and that the rogue element was Trump himself and Pete Hegseth, okay, and Witkoff and Kushner and their connection with the Israelis, and that the deep state is reining that in. I think that is happening, which is why we've seen this here. They can take the humiliation on the chin in the short term, okay? And maybe the situation was bad enough that the Iranians believed that they, you know, managed to get enough concessions to actually come to the table, because they'd been pretty belligerent up until that time. And, you know, I mean, I saw footage from Iran and interview with Mirandi, you know, just hours before this happened, and they were still defiant. They were ready to fight. They'd recruited something like 12 million volunteers ready to fight, and they were waiting for a ground invasion and all of this. And yet, at the final hour, they came to the table as well. Okay, it suggests that from their point of view, they believe that they've got enough out of this, that they've come out stronger. The big worry, and this is a huge concern, to be honest, is could they possibly fall for it again after what they did to the Ayatollah and what they did to the other guy, where the Israelis hit the negotiation? Would the Israelis try that again? These are all questions, but it does seem, to me, it seems like the end is nigh for the Netanyahu kind of terror regime. That's what it feels like. It feels like this is the moment if it's ever going to happen, it's going to happen now. And the level of seethe coming out of the Knesset and coming out with the Zayo influencers suggests that they see something right on the wall. Don't forget that in Israel, they had a counter, right, in a TV studio, an 8-hour counter, up to the moment where they believed that Iran was going to get wiped off the map by the Americans. They ended up getting blue-balled, and they were furious. Okay, now, if that is kayfabe, these people are tremendously good actors. Maybe they were just trying to sell it. Maybe this all these theatrics from Netanyahu and his cronies and his opponents and Hebrew Twitter and so on is just theatrics and kayfabe. Maybe. We will see. Time will tell. But for now, hugely significant moment. And could, in years to come, be seen as era-defining. We shall see. Quite remarkable, really. I'll just remind you, just 2 days ago, 155 aircraft saved one Colonel Jesus up on the mountains. Sounds like what you do when you've comprehensively won a war and then declare victory, doesn't it? Pick up a course at the academic agency, buy it now, Trivium, etc., and I'll see you all next time.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.